And ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to the Experience Hockey Talk, Serious Hockey Talk for serious hockey fans, as we make our return from our more than a month and a half long hiatus for the holidays and our first episode of 2019. And I am, of course, Michael Lindenbaum, the host, the guy who does everything and cries in the fetal position while doing it. And joining me is our St. Louis Blues contributor, Arian Weisenfeld. Arian, welcome back. Last time we had you on was for the season premiere.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you for having me. It's been, based on the Blues season, it has been a very long time.
We'll get to the Blues in a moment, because obviously you made some powerful boasts going into the regular season, but we'll get to that in a little bit. First off, I want to start off with the Washington Capitals, who ironically right now as we're recording are taking on your St. Louis Blues, with the Blues right now in the first period with about 8:36 left in the first, are up 1-0 off of a Robert Thomas tip-in goal. But right now, the Capitals are first place in the Metropolitan Division. They're actually 1 point ahead of the Pittsburgh Penguins, who are idled tonight. But some of the big news coming out of the Caps is that Alex Ovechkin, who was voted on as the All-Star captain for the Metropolitan Division, announced or informed the league that he would be skipping the All-Star game. As a result, he will be suspended for one game, either the game on the 23rd against the Toronto Maple Leafs or on February 1st against the Calgary Flames. Obviously, it'll be a decision made by the Capitals and Alex Ovechkin on which of one of those two games he will miss per league rules. Arian, real quick, if you're in Ovechkin's situation, which game would you prefer to miss? The game going into the All-Star break or the game immediately out of the All-Star break? Which, keep in mind, the Capitals are going right into their bye week as soon as the All-Star break is over.
I would probably pick the game right before the All-Star break. If you're going to already have a bye the week after, I wouldn't want to have any additional time off after that. You know, everybody's getting back in the swing of things, and I would just want to be out there.
Yeah, and I actually agree. I would take the game off against Toronto. One, it's a road game. So you can just go sit in the press box, watch that game, go into the All-Star break, and go right into your bye week. And then you can pick right back up on February 1st when the Capitals host at home the Calgary Flames and start right up with the rest of the team. Because one of the big things that the Capitals are going to have to face going into this is, and it's for any team that that goes into these bye weeks, is – the Capitals are one of the most consistent teams right now. Pittsburgh is hitting their stride right now. Columbus has been consistent this season so far. Tampa Bay's been red hot. You can't deny Tampa Bay. Winnipeg's been very consistent. Vegas, after a slow start, has been very consistent now. So you got to look at this and go All-Star break, bye week, or All-Star break, play a week, and then the bye week for certain teams. Losing that momentum, trying to gain it back right away. If you're Alex Ovechkin, obviously you want to come back February 1st. That way you're with the team right when you're trying to get that momentum going your direction and maintaining it going into the playoff push. What are your thoughts on that, especially going into a coming out of a bye week?
Absolutely. I think it probably doesn't matter all that much. Especially for somebody like Ovechkin, I think even if he misses that game and he gets back in after the rest of the team, he's probably just going to pick up, right where he left off. But I still think that it would be probably the best scenario for him to just start with the team.
Yeah, and then also yesterday it was announced that John Carlson and Braden Holtby would be representing the Washington Capitals. And John Carlson, of course, getting his first ever All-Star appearance, while Braden Holtby will be in his fourth consecutive one.
Before I saw that, I had no idea. I knew Carlson was good and having a good season, but I did not realize he was over a point per game player.
Yeah, and Carlson was kind of like that last season too. And of course, people go, "Oh, he was snubbed." You know, I mean, you could put a case for a lot of teams where, you know, Toronto Maple Leafs team, you have John Tavares, Austin Matthews, Mitch Marner, Jake Gardner, Sammy Kapanen, or not Sammy Kapanen, Kasperi Kapanen. Sammy Kapanen is the father of Kasperi Kapanen. And then, of course, William Nylander, you know, and, you know, Morgan Riley. So you got all these names for Toronto, Tampa Bay. You have 5 to 6 names that can easily go to the All-Star game. Same with San Jose and a few others. So essentially everyone's going to have a major snub from the All-Star roster. And that's just because of how the rosters are built. And looking at it from this perspective, if I have the right one up, there it is. So if you look at the Metropolitan Division roster, you have Sebastian Aho from Carolina, Cam Atkinson from Columbus, Matthew Barzal from the Islanders, Sidney Crosby from the Penguins, Claude Giroux from the Flyers, Taylor Hall from the Devils, Carlson from the Caps, Seth Jones from Columbus, Holtby in goal from the Caps, and then Henrik Lundqvist for the Rangers. And then when you actually take a look at the last men in fan vote, which went live today, you have Tuvu Teravainen from the Hurricanes, Nick Foligno from the Blue Jackets, Kyle Palmieri from the Devils, Anders Lee from the Islanders, Matt Zuccarello from the Rangers, Jacob Voracek from the Flyers, Nicholas Backstrom from the Caps, and Chris Letang from the Pittsburgh Penguins. You know, going back to the actual All-Star roster, you know, one thing that people kind of forget too is that every team has to be represented.
Mm-hmm.
If Alex Ovechkin did in fact go to the All-Star game, one of two things is probably going to happen. One, probably Cam Atkinson would probably not be going because Seth Jones would be the representative for the team of Columbus as the defenseman.
Mm-hmm.
So Cam Atkinson would be the one that would come out. But then at the same time, Braden Holtby would probably be the one that gets taken out, you know, in favor of Sergei Bobrovsky, who's been hands down one of the better goaltenders in the Metropolitan Division. Or at the same time, Carlson can come out and you could put Letang in there. So Ovi staying in the All-Star game would have actually created a lot more problems, you know, building up this Metro Division roster. And that's before the fan vote. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah. Sure. I guess you're right. I guess probably I think you're right that Cam Atkinson would come out. Because who are the other right wings? Or who are the other wings that are listed there? It's Aho, Taylor Hall, and Atkinson, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But not only that, but you have to have one representative from each team.
Yeah.
And it makes sense for San Jose, who has Brent Burns, Erik Karlsson, and Joe Pavelski, have three guys representing their team. Because they're obviously the host team, so it makes a little bit more sense in that respect. But for looking at the Atlantic Division, you have Austin Matthews and John Tavares, and Nikita Kucherov and Steven Stamkos.
Mm-hmm.
Ovi just scored, 30th of the season right there.
Oh, so surprised, really.
As we're talking about Alex Ovechkin. So you got two from Tampa and two from Toronto in the Atlantic Division. As I'm writing down the notes so I can do the recap still. But Buffalo, Boston, Ottawa, Florida, Detroit, and Montreal all have one representative each. In the Central Division, you have Nathan MacKinnon and Mikko Rantanen for Colorado, Mark Scheifele and Blake Wheeler for Winnipeg, and Roman Josi and Pekka Rinne for the National Predators, whereas the Blackhawks with Patrick Kane, the Dallas Stars with a rookie stud defenseman, Miro Heiskanen, Devin Dubnyk of the Wild, and of course Ryan O'Reilly from your St. Louis Blues as the lone representatives for their team.
Is the fan voting done yet? Because I know they're trying to get Tarasenko in there.
Fan voting started today at noon. And for those wondering, today is we're recording on January 3rd, if you couldn't tell by us talking about the Caps-Blues game. But then the voting ends on January 10th.
Okay.
And then for the Pacific Division, Connor McDavid, Johnny Gaudreau, Clayton Keller, Elias Pettersson, Drew Doughty, Marc-Andre Fleury, and John Gibson, they're the only representatives for their team in the Pacific Division. So when you look at that roster there, you know, it makes sense for the host team to have three, to have the most.
Mm-hmm.
But realistically, when you look at how this is, the most a team can be represented by a player with how it is with four teams and you play three on three, the most you can legitimately have is two players from a team and still make sure that every team gets represented. So, and it's tough. So it's like, I always laugh when people go, oh, well, Anders Lee of the Islanders has been snubbed. Yeah, Anders Lee is probably one of the better players on the Islanders right now. But somebody's got to represent the team, and then you have to have somebody represent all the other teams.
Right.
And right now you have Columbus and Washington as the only two teams that have two players on the Metro Division roster. Now that could change with the last man in vote, because if Nick Foligno goes in, then Columbus has three players, or if Nicklas Backstrom gets voted in, then Washington has three players. And then, but then at the same time, is if Teravainen, Palmieri, Lee, Zuccarello, Voracek, or Letang go in, then one of those teams will then have two representatives from their team. And then for the Pacific Division, you know very well that Logan Couture is probably going to get voted in, even though in my personal opinion, it should be Mark Giordano from the Calgary Flames. Because Giordano is having a heck of a season up in Calgary and is one of the reasons why Calgary's having such a good season so far.
I would like to see Matthew Tkachuk be there.
Matthew Tkachuk is not an option. The Pacific, remember, it's only one player from a team that you can vote from. And for the Pacific Division, it's Ryan Getzlaf of the Anaheim Ducks, Leon Draisaitl of the Edmonton Oilers, Anze Kopitar of the Kings, Logan Couture of the Sharks, Brock Besser of the Canucks, Jonathan Marchessault of the Golden Knights, Oliver Ekman-Larsson of the Coyotes, and Mark Giordano of the Calgary Flames.
Mm-hmm.
So those are the only people. So like when they announce these eight, or in the case of the Central Division, seven players, that's all you're allowed to vote for. You cannot do write-ins. I know everyone was trying to write in Tom Wilson, or at least here in this area, trying to write in Tom Wilson for the All-Star game.
Yeah, here in this area and then nowhere else.
Yeah, it wasn't going to happen. Let's be realistic here.
The rest of the league, their fans kind of want to write Tom Wilson out of the league.
And you know, and that's a very good segue to talk about Wilson, because obviously this is his first time playing the Blues since the hit in the preseason game against Oscar Sundquist, originally given a 20-game suspension, upheld originally by Commissioner Gary Bettman, and then reduced by neutral arbitrator Shyam Daz, which probably after that and the Austin Watson reduction, we may not be hearing much from Shyam Daz after this season as the neutral arbitrator. Because apparently he has a very bad habit of just wanting to reduce suspensions like crazy, which is why Major League Baseball fired him. But since Wilson has come back, he has been producing at a pretty high level. Now, of course, when he got blindsided by Ryan Reeves and missed a few games, it kind of took a little bit of his momentum away.
Mm-hmm.
But overall, as a player, Tom, you can tell that Wilson has been trying to steer away from that type of stuff. Yeah, you had the issue with Brett Cini against New Jersey, where you clearly saw that his shoulder hit Senny's shoulder, and then, you know, he also tried to reduce as much impact as possible. You know, he's trying to get around him. He's not trying to go through him. So, I mean, that was a kind of a tough situation on that one. But outside of that one thing, he's been producing on the scoreboard.
He's not a bad player. I mean, again, everybody, a lot of my Capitals fan friends, they don't like it when he's referred to as a goon, because they say, how can he be a goon? He, you know, he's actually a good hockey player. And he is not a bad hockey player. He can produce offensively, but you can still be a goon if you're very, very reckless with your hits. But let me read you a quote or a tweet from this guy, Andy Strickland, who's he's a host of a local radio show in St. Louis and covers the Blues.
Yeah, I follow Andy on Twitter.
Okay. So he says, honest talk with Tom Wilson today. Says it's gotten to the point he'd rather not make a hit in fear of it being considered illegal. Says it's 100% in his head throughout a hockey game. He also said he'll be sitting out preseason games against the Blues moving forward. Now, I don't know what you think about that, but I have very little sympathy for this guy. He should know exactly what's a legal hit and exactly what's not a legal hit. I understand that Tom Wilson is not going around saying, I am going to knock this guy out. Reeves went after Wilson and said, I'm going to knock him out. So I understand that the intent is not there for what he's been doing. But the fact is, the way he hits people, he goes low to high. And yeah, he's trying to get him in the shoulder. But it's the same thing. I also follow the Cardinals. And one thing that their former manager, Tony La Russa, used to say is that if their pitchers are not good enough to throw up and in and make sure they never hit someone in the head, he's never going to allow them to throw up and in. This is the same thing with Tom Wilson. He's not apparently good enough to not be reckless with his hits. So I don't really want to hear it from him that he doesn't know what's legal and what's not legal. It sounds to me like he thinks that intent should be imparted when judging the rules. And he's saying that I'm not trying to hurt anybody, but the fact is it doesn't matter. And so these kind of quotes, I don't know what the point of him saying this would be.
Well, the great one is that, and I'm not sure if you read Gary Bettman's 32-page report on why he upheld the 20 games. But one of the things that I found very interesting in it, because I actually read the full thing, is that Brian McClellan was there to testify.
Mm-hmm.
And even Brian McClellan came out and said that the hit that he put on Oscar Sundquist shouldn't have happened. You know, but there is an interesting, you know, double-edged sword on this, in that, you know, Wilson gets, you know, the 20-game suspension for what he did, but yet you have other guys around the league doing the exact same thing, and they're not even having it looked at. And some of those hits are actually worse than what Wilson's done, impact-wise. Yes. And that's one of the biggest problems. I know Wilson is a polarizing figure, and he's going to be probably for the rest of his career because of it, unless he can really change the game and go a few – I mean, not shy away from hitting guys, but really curve the way he hits guys. Kind of like the way Eric Lindros had the – you know, he openly admitted that if he had curved down the style of how he played, he probably would have been playing still, and he probably wouldn't have had as many concussions as he had.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's kind of the same deal with Wilson when you look at that. Because they're kind of almost like the same type of player. They have the skill, but they also have that physicality to them. And,
right.
You know, and here's the thing. And you know this because you and I, we've talked about this, I think, ever since you and I became teammates on the Street Sharks. And that's the fact that Wilson should have never played for Adam Oates and for George McPhee. Because they let him run around like a goon.
Mm-hmm.
And it took Barry Trotz 4 years to really rein him in, to get him to become a first-line player. which is what he was drafted to be. I remember because I was watching that draft and my dad almost breaking the coffee table in half because the Caps drafted Tom Wilson before the Flyers could have a chance to draft him.
Would you rather have Thomas Wilson or Tom Wilson or Thomas Hurdle?
Honestly, I'd stick with Wilson. I like Hurdle. I like Hurdle. I don't see a lot of Hurdle with San Jose. Does Thomas Hurdle play on the penalty kill at all? Or is he just like a power play guy?
I'm not sure.
Yeah, see, that's the thing. I mean, that's a good question that we could save for another episode. Like, you know, if I'm able to stay up to watch a San Jose Sharks game, because they are pretty late for us here on the East Coast. You know, I'd have to watch and see how he's utilized and stuff like that to make a fair judgment. But for Wilson, he's a guy that you can put on your power play. He's top six. He can produce. He can create chaos in front of the net just by standing there. He can create space. And especially on a line with Alex Ovechkin and Evgeny Kuznetsov, the reason that line is so successful is because Tom Wilson is on that line and using his size, and Alex Ovechkin is on that line using his size. So teams are going, which one do we go after now?
Mm-hmm.
And it opens up so much space for Evgeny Kuznetsov to do his thing, or if Nicholas Backstrom's between them, for him to do his thing.
Mm-hmm.
But Wilson's a penalty killer, and when he's not in the box, he's actually a pretty damn good penalty killer too.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's so much more to Wilson's game that I see, but at the same time, he should never have played for Oates or McPhee, because they let him be the goon. They let him be that fighter, enforcer type guy, which even when he was a rookie coming into the league, you knew that that role of the enforcer or of the goon at that point in time was dying out.
Mm-hmm.
Was going extinct. It's like you're not getting rid of people fighting, but the role of just a fighter, that, you know, as we've seen, has gone away. And Oates and McPhee kind of let him do that. And like I said, it took Trotz 4 years to, you know, kind of beat it into Wilson's head. You know, don't be going out trying to do dumb hits. Don't be going out trying to start fights. You know, we've had it where in games where Wilson, the Caps are in a lead, and Wilson's now refusing to drop the gloves because he realizes he's more valuable on the ice contributing offensively or defensively than by being in the penalty box.
Right.
And see, I've seen that growth. But it still doesn't discount the fact that, yeah, he technically did start as a goon. He's just, sometimes bad habits are hard to break. We both know that. So, but he's trying, and you can tell that he's actually trying.
So, I think, yes. And I think that if he shows this effort and he plays clean for a while, we're not going to see the disparate treatment. Because I agree. I agree, that there is disparate treatment between him and other players, especially when you look at, you know, Evgeny Malkin, who does do a lot of the same stuff as Wilson. But I also think there absolutely should be disparate treatment, but it shouldn't be as big as it is now, probably.
Yeah, and not only that, but, like, here's the other thing. It's like, you brought up Kuznetsov. It's like, in the game against Winnipeg, which was Wilson's second game back, you had, I forget what his name is on the Jets, but he came in and blatantly elbowed Kuznetsov in the jaw, which gave Kuznetsov a concussion, and he missed some time. And then later in the near the end of the game, Josh Morrissey of the Jets body slammed Oshie in around the boards on top of his head, which made him miss like 10 games due to a concussion. But the funny thing is that Morrissey didn't even have a hearing, which a month before, Mike Matheson of the Florida Panthers was suspended 2 games for the exact same play that he did to Elias Pettersson. It's what Matheson did to Pettersson and Morrissey did to Oshie were the exact same thing. Matheson got suspended, but Morrissey didn't. And it's that also type of inconsistency that needs to get looked at. And another thing is that people wanted to compare when Wilson hit Senny compared to when Ryan Reeves hit Wilson.
Mm-hmm.
There was a difference on the play, and when you watch the videos of both plays, you can tell what it is. Is that when Wilson hits Senny, Wilson is tracking his defenseman. He's tracking his guy who he is following into the zone, which is what he's supposed to do. He sees Senny, and then he tries to minimize himself and try to get out of the way as much as possible, and then his shoulder hits Senny's shoulder from behind. Match penalty should have been called. Maybe, maybe not. Maybe 2 minutes for interference.
I think that was a blown call, and I think they just did it because of the optics.
It was Tom Wilson, yeah. You know, but you know what? That's in the past, so we're not going to get into the debate of should have been a match, should it not have been. It doesn't matter. The thing is that when Reeves comes after Wilson, he's targeting Wilson, and it had been known the entire game that he had been targeting Wilson all game in that game in Vegas. And Wilson is playing the puck. He threw the pass, and then Reeves comes from behind and drills Wilson, which he also got a match penalty for that. But that was one where he actually targeted Wilson, whereas Wilson was not targeting Senny.
Yeah.
So that type of stuff, I mean, it's like, if you're going to call Wilson on those things and suspend him for those things, where you say that he targeted somebody like you would say with the Oscar Sundquist hit in the preseason, then you got to do the same thing to the other guys, even if they are hitting a guy with the name Wilson, number 43, on the back of his jersey.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I have to look at the Wilson hit again. I'm not sure that should have been a match penalty either, because I'm not sure he got him in the head. But I think that was my point earlier, though, that intent shouldn't really matter. I think it's, you know, on a moral and a personal level, I think it's worse what Reeves did than, you know, what Wilson did with Senny. But I don't think that intent is part of the rule.
Right. Now, let's move on. We could talk about Wilson for the next 500 years. Okay, good. We can talk about Wilson for like the next 500 years. But there's a specific team that we do need to talk about. And that is your St. Louis Blues, as you alluded to at the very beginning of the episode. Not doing so hot after, nope. as you boasted, the team who won the off season.
Well, they still won the off season. I'm going to maintain that. It doesn't mean that they're good now.
So you're not backing down from that claim. They won the off season. No. So they're automatically Stanley Cup contenders.
Okay. Look, that's a completely different thing. This team no longer has Berglund. No team has Berglund. And they don't have Sobotka anymore, and they have Ryan O'Reilly. They definitely won the offseason, but they were a bad team last year. I guess they continue to be a shockingly bad team this year. I will admit, I'm very surprised with how they've been doing. I think if you look at it, maybe I was blinded a little bit by, you know, the Kool-Aid that the team was feeding everybody. But I guess if you really kind of look at it, I still think that their offense is good, and I think that at the beginning of the season, their offense was doing okay. But they demoted Kyrou, which they shouldn't have.
Fabry is an all-star. He did get named to the AHL All-Star Classic.
Well, okay, whatever. I mean, seriously, I don't care what the Blues minor league affiliate does. So because he really should have been up here playing legitimate minutes from the beginning. Yeah, he wasn't. And a lot of this was on Mike Yeo, but he wasn't there. Fabry was injured at the beginning, and then he got injured again. And then Thomas, obviously, it takes any rookie a little bit of time to warm up. So, you know, going into next year, if they have these three guys really, you know, holding down your second line, that's going to be a lot better. But when you have guys like Alex Steen, who is bad, I mean, Alex Steen, they play him more than they play anybody. And he is very slow, and he can't really score anymore. He's not that great defensively. He's not what he once was. Perron has been okay. I really like David Perron. And for whatever reason, to send a message, the coaching staff benched him for the game, which I don't like. I think Perron, all he does is play hard every game. He loves the city. He's producing offensively. Those types of moves by a coaching staff that also shouldn't be there is completely baffling. But then, more so, if you look at the defense and you look at the goaltending, Pietrangelo has been injured, but even before that, you know, the defense wasn't very good. Pietrangelo is still, he's having a down year, but he is still an all-world number one, you know, top 10 to 12 defenseman in the league type of defenseman. But there's a huge drop-off after that. They can try to sell Colton Parayko on me all they want. The guy is mediocre. He is not the second coming of Chris Pronger. Just because he's tall and he has blonde hair doesn't mean he's going to be Chris Pronger. And then after that, let me look at the defensemen that have actually played for them this year. You have Joel Edmondson, mediocre. Robert Bortuzzo, worse than mediocre. Vince Dunn, worse than mediocre. Gunnarsson hasn't been back, or he was back, and he's gone now. All of these guys, Jordan Schmaltz, if you play with one elite player, one mediocre player, and then the rest of your defensive depth is made up of below average players, you're not going to be a good team. So everybody is now talking about trading Pietrangelo, and there are a lot of people who say that you shouldn't do it because you will search for the next 10 years or whatever to try to find somebody else who's going to play 30 minutes a game, and that might be true. But if we can trade him, none of this first-round pick or unproven talent type of trades, if we can trade him for three competent to slightly better than competent defensemen, and we can roll those three guys out with Parayko and with Edmondson, that's going to completely transform this team. And I would rather have five defensemen who are above average than one defenseman who's an all-star and a bunch of, you know, not really great complementary pieces. And I think that's really where their problem lies, because the offense will fix itself next year unless they do something stupid like trade Tarasenko or trade O'Reilly. But now
I'm going to cut you off there for a moment, and the reason why is because after the firing of Mike Yeo and the placement of Craig Berube as the interim head coach, because the Blues are still actively interviewing for the coaching position.
Mm-hmm.
St. Louis Blues beat reporter Jeremy Rutherford, who we both follow, put out a tweet stating that the general manager, Doug Armstrong, is listening to offers, and that pretty much everyone is being looked at, including Vladimir Tarasenko.
Right. So what's
your opinions on the fact that this team could potentially go into fire sale mode? And what does that mean about the possible future status of Doug Armstrong if he has to go into fire sale mode?
Oh, it means that he shouldn't be the one in charge of it. I mean, I'm not sold on them necessarily doing that. Just because I think a lot of these contracts, O'Reilly's contract is a good one. Okay. They're not losing any value by having him. Tarasenko's contract is a good one. So if they trade players like that, they better be getting back more than what they're worth. And I'm not sure that's going to really happen when, especially for Tarasenko, when he's having a down year now. But can I see Doug Armstrong trading players for less than what they're worth when they have a down year? Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, I can. So Doug Armstrong needs to not be the GM, starting right now. I don't want him to be the general manager at all. And if we're going to go through a rebuild, I don't want him to have any part of it. You can look at some of the trades that he's made and said, you know, they're fine. And some of the drafts that he's had and say they're pretty good. But again, he has a lot of advisors for those and a lot of scouting teams for those. What he doesn't really have help with is player contracts. And he wasn't the one who signed O'Reilly to the contract. Tarasenko gave them a discount. But you look at why they don't have any depth. They don't have any depth because he signed Jori Lehterä immediately to a $5 million extended contract and then had to trade away a couple first-round picks to get rid of him. Berglund, Sobotka, they had to include Thompson, who, granted, that guy is not that good, but he was still a high-level prospect. And they traded another first-round pick just to get rid of these guys. So the stuff that he's been doing alone, or largely where he has the most influence, have not been very good. So I don't really want to see this guy in charge of trading away key assets or being in charge of a rebuild. And I think in all likelihood, the owner is not going to allow a trade. Maybe he'll allow a trade for Pietrangelo or some of these other players. I don't think he's going to allow that for Tarasenko, if only because when they get the All-Star game next year, they need a marquee player. And, you know, I don't care how good Alex Pietrangelo is, he's not a marquee player, and really neither is Ryan O'Reilly. Tarasenko is the only marquee player that we have, and he needs to be around for the All-Star game next year.
Yeah, and which is a great segue. I think they're like, what, the second worst team in the league, even though they have the same amount of points as Ottawa, because they have fewer losses, Ottawa is actually the worst team in the league.
Yeah, Blues are sitting there at 34 points. Actually, okay, so no. Ottawa has 35 points.
Oh, so St. Louis is now the worst team in the league.
Yep.
Gotcha.
And they play four fewer games than them, so.
Yeah, that's also true. So they have four games in hand on Ottawa then. But yeah, you're now essentially taking the worst team in the league and giving them the All-Star game.
Yeah.
First off, what does getting the All-Star game in St. Louis mean to you?
I like to see it because I think that it's good to showcase the city. And we've already showcased the city with the Winter Classic a couple of years ago. And, you know, we've heard a lot of people say that it was the best one that they've had. So I think whenever St. Louis, be it the MLB All-Star Game, NHL All-Star Game, I guess we never got a Super Bowl, but anything that any main center stage event that we put on, I think maybe because, you know, we want to show everyone how great the city is or how comparable the city is, at least to some of the more major markets, they really go all out and they really do a good job. And I think that it's going to be good for the league, and I think it's going to be good. I think it's going to hopefully get some more casual fans to watch the team, although I don't know if that's going to happen. You know, even in St. Louis, get more casual fans to watch the team. I'm not sure that's going to happen unless they actually get good also. But if they can have sort of a renaissance next year and we have the All-Star game, I think that the Blues have a very ardent and strong fan base, but it's not the majority of the city, or it's not like it is for the Cardinals. And especially given how good the Cardinals are, and how good they were and constantly playing in October when the hockey season started, you had to wait that whole month until the Cardinals were done essentially with the World Series. And then everybody would say, okay, let's go to a Blues game. Maybe if they can show that hockey is, you know, just generally really fun and everybody who goes to these games has a really good time, the Blues don't have to take it on the chin that first month of the season and let, you know, everybody warm up to the team. So I think it's going to be a very good experience for everybody, and I think it's very nice whenever St. Louis can host these types of major events.
Yeah, and real quick, second period of the Blues-Caps game, Bertuzzo just fought Wilson.
Oh, okay.
So I guess that's your little payback for the Sundquist hit, per se, I guess. I guess now they could put water under the bridge on that one. Who knows?
Mm. Yeah.
But yeah, no, but also at the same time, but there's one thing that the Cardinals have done that the Blues haven't done. And that's win the big one.
Yeah.
So.
But even had they not, the fan base for the Cardinals is rather unique. Even prior to 2004, when it had been a couple of decades since they won one, it's something very, very different. It's a main culture of the city. Like when you think of St. Louis, you think of the Arch, and then you think of the Cardinals. So it's my dream or my hope that one day the Blues can get to that level.
And to imagine that actually when they first started in the NHL, they were at that level because they did make it to the Stanley Cup Finals, I think, the first three seasons or something like that.
Yeah, that was from a watered-down conference, and then they went 0-12.
Yeah, so, but talking about the Blues, let's talk about one of their division rivals, and that is the Dallas Stars. A little after Christmas, the CEO of the Dallas Stars, Jim Lights, brought in Sean Shapiro of The Athletic into his office for a sit-down. And what ended up becoming a very hard-hitting interview where he called out the top two players of the Dallas Stars, which is Tyler Seguin and Jamie Benn, uttering expletives about how he feels that they've been playing. In your opinion, how do you feel about that, about the CEO coming out ripping the top two players of the team, which, granted, yes, the Dallas Stars are in the same position of the St. Louis Blues of potentially missing the playoffs, although the Stars, as of today, are holding a wild card spot in the West. What's your thoughts on this?
I think that was ridiculous, especially given how Seguin is having a pretty good season. I mean, he's 36 points in 41 games, top line center. Jamie Benn, 32 points in 41 games. These guys are not exactly, scrubs. And as soon as that happened, my friend who's a fan of the Islanders, he just texted me. He's like, "Oh, Dallas CEO goes on a vulgar tirade in the media against his own Stars." Straight out of the Mike Milbury playbook.
He would know. but it's also interesting because literally days after this happens, Dallas gets awarded the 2020 Winter Classic, which will be held at the Cotton Bowl. What is the weird coincidence that the CEO of a franchise rips apart two players and then like days later they get announced as hosting the 2020 Winter Classic?
I wonder if that would have still happened if, because I'm guessing that they planned this far in advance.
Oh yeah, they do. I remember when the Capitals got the Winter Classic, they said that they had to plan it out like a year, almost a year and a half in advance.
Mm-hmm.
So, because there's a reason why they announce these outdoor games so far out. So like, hey, they're playing the Winter Classic on this New Year's Eve. They're going to announce the very next one, because as soon as they announce the first one, they're already working on the next location for the following year.
Mm-hmm.
So they worked on it for quite a while. But still, it's just a coincidence that Dallas is in the headlines for the CEO, and then they're back in the headlines for a more positive thing. It's just kind of weird. It's a story that you just can't write yourself,
Yeah.
It's interesting.
I've never seen this. I mean, I've really never seen anything like that for a CEO to call out their star players like that.
No, it's definitely interesting. So, and then next up, obviously the announcement of the Dallas Stars hosting the All-Star game the Winter Classic at the Cotton Bowl. No opponent has been announced yet.
No, we have Blackhawks.
What?
He'll probably be the Blackhawks.
No, it won't be the Blackhawks. The rumor going right now is either the Rangers or the Wild. And I'm going to be brutally honest here. If it's not the Minnesota Wild, they're doing it wrong.
Yeah, I would say either it should be Minnesota or Buffalo.
Buffalo would be good. And Buffalo would be good simply for the fact of the 99 finals.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be really good. I actually agree with that. But the other thing that I would put out there is if you don't do Minnesota versus Dallas next season in the Winter Classic, you got to do a stadium series game where the Minnesota Wild are hosting the Dallas Stars.
Yeah.
Because the only time that the Minnesota Wild has played in an outdoor game was in Colorado for the stadium series where Colorado hosted. But the thing is, though, is that for the Wild, when they did their alumni game, they did the North Stars jerseys. But it would be so much greater if they did a Winter Classic where it's the Minnesota Wild versus the Dallas Stars. And the Dallas Stars are wearing, like, the Minnesota North Stars jerseys.
Mm-hmm. And the winner gets the rights to it.
Yeah, something like that. You raise the stakes. But then the Minnesota Wild do, like, their own kind of take on the whole Minnesota North Stars look as well. But Wild-related. And yeah. I think you have something like that, and it would be really cool to have for that. Because that's how you pay homage to the game right there, especially to the roots of the original Minnesota team.
Yeah.
So, but then also, they did announce this one. The Winnipeg Jets will be hosting the Calgary Flames in October at the Mosaic Stadium in Regina. This will actually be a neutral site game. This is a site that has been talked about, at least on Hockey Night in Canada, by Elliot Friedman for, I think Friedman's been talking about this for 2 years, that Regina is going to be a location for an NHL game, and it finally is. And actually, this is going to be really cool to see a neutral site game between two Canadian rivals in a Canadian city that is diehard for hockey.
I'm surprised Saskatchewan doesn't have an NHL team. The Blues almost moved there.
Well, we could say the same that, you know, well, Quebec should have a team.
Yeah.
Toronto should have a second team.
Mm.
You know, the greatest argument with Toronto is that you can have three teams in the New York metro area. You can have two teams in LA, but you can't have two teams in Toronto.
Right.
Tell me something here. but yeah, so Winnipeg, Calgary, and honestly, that will be a good game because Calgary and Winnipeg are like two top teams right now.
Yep.
In the Western Conference. And if they stay that way through the rest of the season and the playoffs and then going into next season for that outdoor game, for the Heritage Classic, that's going to be a hell of a game right there.
Yeah.
And then next up, you have Stadium Series. Colorado's hosting yet again I think Minnesota might have hosted against Colorado. We'll have to look that up. I know it was a few years ago. We'll have to look up all the Stadium Series games. I'm pretty sure it was Colorado that hosted it, though. But Colorado is hosting this stadium series, and it'll be at the Air Force Falcon Stadium. So this will be the second stadium series game that'll be taking place at a military stadium or a military academy. The first time, obviously, was last season at the Naval Academy between the Capitals and the Maple Leafs, which, by the way, those Caps jerseys still are the worst in franchise history. And I loved the Toronto Maple Leafs uniforms, the all-white. That was beautiful. It drove my friend Dixon insane watching that game on his TV, and it was totally worth it. But also for this one, Colorado, we know will be the host. an opponent is unknown. I know I've heard the Vegas Golden Knights thrown out there, but also at the same time, people have said that maybe Vegas will not host it or not play in this one, but will host the next Stadium Series game, which will be held at the Army one, the Army Academy, given how Bill Foley, the owner of the Vegas Golden Knights, has ties to the Army, being how he served in the military. Mm-hmm. So it makes more sense for Vegas to actually host one with the Army as the host. So it'll be interesting to see who they do with Colorado. Obviously, we've seen Colorado-Detroit before.
Yeah.
In an outdoor game. That actually might have been that Stadium Series game. Yes. Yeah, I think Minnesota might have played somebody else, like Chicago or something. No, they didn't play Chicago in the series.
They did, actually. 2016 NHL Stadium Series, Minnesota-Chicago.
And that was at where? Soldier Field?
No, Minneapolis.
Oh, okay, so that was the one. Okay, so yeah. So Minnesota did host one. Haha, I am stupid. Partially right, but really stupid. But so it would be interesting to see who Colorado can do, because Colorado has hosted Detroit in an outdoor game before. So you got to kind of look at who would be a good fit. Maybe the Washington Capitals, given how many times we've traded goaltenders to them.
St. Louis would be a good one for them. Division rival. They always play very hard against each other. I think it would be a good game.
Who?
St. Louis.
That would be one, but the problem with that is that you're already giving St. Louis the All-Star game.
Yeah.
So you kind of can't do the double dip on that one. So, it would be interesting. Whoa. Sorry, I'm trying to keep track of this game while the game is happening.
2-1 now.
Yeah, I know. 2-1. You had the Bertuzzo-Wilson fight. And apparently Wilson just got a penalty. I guess he got tied up with Pietrangelo, and Pietrangelo tried fighting. Oh, Pietrangelo got, yeah, so it was Quincidal Miners. And everyone's, like, listening into this episode going, what the hell are these guys doing? It's like, oh, we're trying to watch the Caps-Blues game while also at the same time record a podcast. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But yeah, Colorado, St. Louis, you can't do St. Louis because of the All-Star game. So St. Louis would be out, Calgary would be out, Winnipeg would be out, Dallas would be out. Chicago would be out because they just hosted against Boston. Boston would be out. Pittsburgh and Philadelphia will be out, will be considered as out, because both teams are going to be playing in the Stadium Series next month in Lincoln Field in Philadelphia. So those are the teams that are definitely going to be ruled out. I mean, theoretically speaking, you can do the Capitals versus Colorado because of the military thing and the Capitals being in Washington, D.C. You can totally work that in there, per se. But I don't think it would be a good fit for that one. Honestly, because it's Air Force, if Winnipeg wasn't hosting the Heritage Classic, I would have done the Winnipeg Jets.
Mm-hmm.
Especially the fact that their current uniforms are a Canadian Air Force type of tribute.
Mm-hmm.
Because they have like the F-17 on their jersey.
Right.
So that would have made a little bit more sense there. But yeah, it's interesting. I mean, only in time we'll find out. You'll hear more murmurs of who it could be as time goes on. Especially when you get closer to the end of the season. So,
right.
But alrighty then, going into the All-Star break for you, where do you hoping to see out of your St. Louis Blues these next couple weeks offense. Before the break?
Offense and more of them, because I mean, this team, they're really not going to rebound enough to make the playoffs. Even if they do, they need to take a hard look at themselves and say, what's going to come from making playoffs? Do you stand a chance? Even if it's not, are you the best? Do you stand a chance to get hot and to legitimately win four rounds. And you can definitely look at teams and say yes or no. You could have always looked at the Capitals and said yes. You could have always looked at the Penguins and said yes, the Blackhawks, the Kings, all of these teams. But for this team, for the Blues, the answer is no. And one of the reasons why the answer is no is that they don't have that top-level elite offensive player, and particularly top offensively elite first-line center. So if you look at, you know, you look at basically any team that's won since Gretzky started playing, and they are mostly centered around one star and one, you know, most of the time it's going to be top center, but even if it's not top center, it's really, really high level elite offensive player. Patrick Kane, Ovechkin, those are the two wings. And then you look at Pittsburgh with Crosby and Malkin. Only LA, any, you can look and say, is Anze Kopitar really at that level? I don't know. But the Blues don't really have anybody to match that, and they need to get somebody. So with the lottery system the way it is now, it's not a guarantee that they're going to, even if they get last place, get Jack Hughes. But from what I've seen, what I'm seeing, it is a fairly deep draft that if they draft in the top five, they're going to, you know, whatever player they get is going to really help their team. And if they get Jack Hughes, that's where you start. Now, if Hughes, O'Reilly, Tarasenko, bunch of other fairly decent players, I don't really want to see them start winning games and then get the eighth seed or barely miss the playoffs and then give that pick right over to Buffalo. Just do it right. You got the top overall pick one time before, and I don't want to say that you botched it, because, you know, we didn't know that the league was going to necessarily go this way to kind of de-emphasize the need for, you know, a top-level, purely defensive defenseman. And I know Eric Johnson was supposed to be head and shoulders above everyone else, but it's very like the Blues, where finally they get the top overall pick, and they pick a guy, you know, they trade Pronger just so that they can pick this guy, and then, you know, he turns out to injure himself and then not live up to his potential. And then after him, I think Backstrom was in that draft, Taze was in that draft, Kessel, Giroux, all of these players, but no, you get Eric Johnson. So just lose.
Which, of course, Eric Johnson, they traded for Kevin Shattenkirk.
Yeah.
And I remember that trade because Paul Stastny's father had a meltdown over that. Because it was like, because Paul Stastny was part of that trade too, to the Blues. It was Eric Johnson to Colorado, and I think there was one other piece to that trade that went to Colorado for Paul Stastny and Kevin Shattenkirk.
No, it was actually Chris Stewart and Shattenkirk, because we actually signed Stastny.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that's right. You signed Stastny.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it was like, yeah, that was an interesting trade.
Yeah, I still don't like it. I still don't like it. I didn't like it then. I liked it a little bit when Shattenkirk was pretty good, but long term, I think that was a fairly poor trade.
Yeah. Just like trade that the Capitals made with the Blues for Kevin Shattenkirk.
That was bad for who?
And the Caps.
Really? Well, I don't know. I mean, I think it was a push for it being not very good for either team. You know, Zach Sanford is nothing, really nothing special. And then I guess, so I don't know. I think it wasn't. I wish the Blues would have just kept Shattenkirk, because they, you know, they made the playoffs. They beat Minnesota. They were pretty competitive against Nashville. If we had him to be on the power play, maybe we would have actually gotten past Nashville that year. So, yeah, I think going in, when I heard they were trading with the Capitals for Shattenkirk, I thought, all right, we're going to get Vrana. And then we got some guy I'd never heard of in Sanford. I'm like, this is typical.
Yeah, and we also got Phoenix Copley back, too, in that trade.
I know.
The same Phoenix Copley we traded to you guys for TJ Oshie with Troy Brouwer.
Yeah.
Well, the Brouwer was pretty good for the Blues when he was there.
Yeah, I liked him a lot. I mean, he, even though we only made the third round that year, he scored the game-winning goal against Chicago. That was a very, you know, memorable series. So I don't have a problem. And I never really liked Oshie that much. So I don't have a problem with the trade that they made there. But most Blues fans do.
That's funny. But so one last question for you before we do our wrap up. Do the St. Louis Blues hire a head coach before the end of the season, or do they let Craig Berube ride out the rest of the season?
I think if Joel Quenneville says I want to coach now, he will coach now. And if that's not going to be the case, then they'll probably wait it out, because I don't know who else would be available for them to get. And I think that really the direction they need to go is trying to get Quenneville.
Yeah, and keep in mind, Philadelphia is now in the mix.
Yeah, well, hopefully not.
No, Philly's still in the mix, because Chuck Fletcher even said that Scott Gordon, he'll be the coach for the remainder of the season, that this is his tryout, but he's going to still be interviewing coaches.
Yeah.
So Quenneville, you know, Philadelphia will be in that mix for Joel Quenneville. But interesting note, then we'll do the wrap up. Ron Hextall, former general manager of the Philadelphia Flyers, who I think would probably be a good fit for St. Louis because they could use a guy like him as the general manager.
Yeah.
Or even Seattle, being how they're going to be looking for a GM soon, or they probably are right now. Ron Hextall made it known that apparently that the brass did not like the fact that he traded Braden Schenn to the St. Louis Blues going into last season. And well, and it's kind of like, well, the joke's on you, because he traded Braden Schenn, who everybody liked in Philly, and St. Louis didn't even make the playoffs, and yet the Flyers still made the playoffs without Braden Schenn. So,
yeah,
kind of an interesting concept there, ain't it? And he was able to get that first round pick from you to take Yuri Laterra.
Yep. Yep.
So for Braden Schenn, but going into the wrap up, Arian, where can the people find you on social media?
I have Twitter, and that's about it. And my Twitter handle is A W E I S E N 123.
All right. And when can we anticipate your next article on TXHT?
Sometime soon. I think, I'm not exactly sure, but I think sometime soon. It's been hard to write. I mean, all I want to do is write slam pieces, but
can't write a slam piece every time.
Yeah. But let's tie it. That was actually very nice.
Yeah, exactly. Especially the fact that the referees have been slamming the Caps and the Blues with 9 penalties in this period alone.
Yep.
So, hey, look at that segue. But and of course, you can follow TXHT on Twitter at @TXHT_hockey, Facebook at facebook.com/TXHTHockey, and of course, TXHTHockey.com is where you can read all of the articles that we have. That we post up. We're going to try to start doing more outside of our regular recaps and previews for games. We did 3 articles yesterday alone on the All-Star stuff. I know Steve Gartner, a Toronto Maple Leafs writer, has been trying to put out more Toronto Maple Leafs stuff, since he is our Toronto Maple Leafs writer. And anybody, got comments or anything like that, say so on our Facebook page, say so to us on Twitter, and say so to us on the website. So that's TXHT.
Before we go, I have one question for you, actually. This is just, it's random.
Uh-oh.
Thinking about.
This is why episodes never end on time. Gotcha.
With Ovechkin scoring as much as he is this year, all time, where do you think that puts him? Not just raw totals, but where do you think he is all time in best goal scorer?
He's definitely the best goal scorer of this generation.
Yeah.
Hands down. And if he continues at the pace that he is right now, where if he can get 50 goals in six seasons, this season being one of those 6 seasons, he will definitely top Gretzky.
Yeah, but do you think that makes him better than Gretzky at goal scoring?
Yes, it would make him better, because I think one thing that people need to understand about Wayne Gretzky and about Alex Ovechkin is this. Alex Ovechkin is a pure goal scorer. Wayne Gretzky is a pure hockey player.
Mm-hmm.
Wayne Gretzky, I mean, I'm not going to pull up his stats now. We'll save it for next week when we do next week's episode. But for Wayne Gretzky, you know, I think he had more assists than he had goals.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Alex Ovechkin has more goals than he has assists, even though they're kind of balanced. I mean, yeah, he probably has about 100 more goals than he does assists, but he's still a fairly balanced, you know, player. But goal scoring wise, he's more of a pure goal scorer than Wayne Gretzky is. And not only that, and that's not to take anything away from Gretzky. Gretzky's error, they're like averaging like what, 5 to 7 goals a game.
Yeah.
In his era, whereas Ovechkin's been doing an era where, you know, the goals have been down because of the fact that you have, stingier defenses.
I would put Ovechkin second after Mario Lemieux, because Lemieux went nuts in every era, including the trap era, including when he came back in, you know, 2001 or 2002. So I don't think Ovechkin in any era could have kept pace with him, but I can see him being above Gretzky in goal scoring.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see what happens. Only time will tell. Like I said, he's got to score 50 goals for 6 straight seasons, starting with this season. And then he needs to, he needs to do 50 for 3 seasons and then like 30 for 4.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's like 50 for 3 seasons and then 30 for 4 of those for 4 more seasons after that to top Gretzky.
Yeah.
And he's probably the one guy who can do it.
Yeah. Nobody else.
So, but yeah, man. So again, txhthockey.com, hop up on there. All of our social media stuff is on there. Check out the articles, feel free to comment. And, now that the podcast is back, eventually we'll open up a like a TXHT mailbag segment. And, of course, also next week we will start bringing in NWHL coverage. We wanted to just get through this episode, first episode back, just shoot the breeze like we do. But next week we will definitely be bringing back NWHL content to the show like we always do. And, of course, quick shout-out to Shaggy. He did a State of the Union address. Arian, I think you should take notes, because I think you should do the State of the Union for the St. Louis Blues at the end of the season.
Okay.
I think that would be funny. So, all right, ladies and gentlemen, with that, this is the Experience Hockey Talk, serious hockey talk for serious hockey fans. And until next week, we will see you on the ice.